Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Catola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Catola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us for Cradle My Heart Radio. This is going to be airing the weekend following Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving weekend, and I think that there is a special sweetness to this particular story because it exhibits a thankful heart on the part of a couple going through a real difficult time, but turning that into something big and something beautiful. And maybe you've already heard the story about Kevin Cook and his wife, Nicole, I should say. And it went viral on Facebook. And so we invited Kevin to come on and share a little bit about what God has laid on his heart, especially after the journey that you and Nicole have been walking through. Kevin, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much. How are you, Kim?
I'm doing really well today. I'm glad you could join us. I really wanted to bring your story to light because there's just so much to discuss here. First of all, tell us a little bit about your background. You're in seminary right now.
That's correct. I'm a student at Asbury Theological Seminary, and I work at a local church here in the Lexington area. And there's this big campaign that's going on right now at our school called Attempt Something Big, where at the beginning of the semester, our president challenged the student body to not only have eyes to see what Jesus is doing in and around us, but also to step out in faith and attempt something so big that unless God intervenes, it's bound to fail. And so we took that challenge seriously.
Okay, so and the seeds for the story and your Facebook post that went viral began well before the actual inspiration for the actions that you and Nicole took. In fact, it's really rooted in your sorrow, and I want to give you the opportunity to tell us that part of the story too.
That's right. That's right. Back in this past summer, as many people are aware of, the Planned Parenthood videos that were released, we saw those. We had been struggling with infertility. We had a miscarriage back in December of 2013. And ever since then, we've had trouble trying to get pregnant. And there's no natural or medical explanation for it. It's just unexplained fertility, infertility issues. So in the midst of that, we see these Planned Parenthood videos, and it just completely breaks our heart that people just discard their children as we're sitting here praying over and over again, waiting for God to bring us that blessing. And so in praying over that for the last several months, you know, we really felt the Lord leading us, saying, hey, you can do something about this. You are in a place in your life right now. Adoption had never really occurred to us. We weren't interested just in adopting necessarily, but that our hearts broke over this issue of abortion. And we heard that, hey, we can save one child's life if we go out there and are activists and can go and change somebody's mind and ask them to save their child's life and let us adopt them instead. And so that's what we did. Go ahead.
Hold on just a second now, because I love where the story goes next, but I want to ask you a couple of questions about, about the two of you and about what God has been doing in your lives, because there are so many of our listeners who have also walked through this problem and this sadness of miscarriage. And I first of all want to express my sympathy for your loss, because it is a genuine loss. And I think so often, we just don't even acknowledge that, and we don't take the time to help people grieve. We don't know what to say, so we say nothing. How was the experience of miscarriage for you within your community of faith? Did you have the support that you needed? Tell me a little bit more about that.
We did. It was a very difficult time. It was in my first year of seminary at Asbury, and it was the very end of the first semester when this happened. We were so full of joy when we found out that we were pregnant. We had already, started talking about names, and we've been hoping to get pregnant for a while, and so we already told all of our family and some really close friends, even though it was early on. And then when we found out that things were going wrong and we ended up having a miscarriage, it was right before exam week of my first semester of seminary, and so it was a very difficult time. And I wasn't really even able to process what was going on until after the holiday break, because, you know, the holidays come up with family and there's almost an expectation that everything is good and right, and I had to put that face on. So I basically had to bury a lot of it and through until January, February of 2014, I was able to really come out and my wife and I really grieved together during that time. And it was really hard. It took several months for us to go through this grieving process and knowing that this was a child of ours. We believe that it was a little girl, even though there's no medical reason or insight into that. We just, in our hearts, believe that this was a little girl that was our daughter, and we lift her up to Jesus and hope one day to meet her in the future. So fast forwarding a year. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I want to stay at the place just because I think you're in a unique position, Kevin, to do some educating for us here. I know that when I first started walking out the sorrow of abortion in my own life and having repented, had assurance from the Lord that indeed I will see my child in heaven, that He is gracious to receive those that we reject. It was hard for me to confirm that and affirm it in Scripture because it's not really taught at the level of seminary, from what I understand, in interacting with various spiritual leaders around this question. So I think you have a unique opportunity to talk about, you know, how the news was received from your fellow students, from your professors, the atmosphere at Asbury, particularly because, as I understand it, you aspire to be a pastor in the United Methodist denomination, which is officially a pro-choice denomination. So there's just a lot to sort through there. If you can tell us about navigating those waters theologically, if you will, or spiritually within that faith community.
Right. Well, the United Methodist Church is a tricky place to put yourself on pretty much any issue right now. It's very... unfortunately, it's going through a lot of division. There's very large camps on all sides of every issue. It's a very, very hot mix right now, everything. And my community at Asbury tends to lean on a much more conservative and evangelical side of things theologically and socially. And this being one of them, our seminary is very adamant about life, very adamant about conservative values and holiness. It's very strong points for our seminary. And so the seminary community really surrounded us with love and really just a lot of understanding, and just walked with us through it. Some of my professors were very graceful in the fact that we had exams coming up and allowing us to have that room to breathe with that. So that was really just a very gentle spirit in all of it. Nothing critical, nothing... no hard expectations on us. There's a lot of grace, a lot of grace, a lot of love, just loving us through the process. Theologically, the things that help me stay grounded and knowing that I'm going to see my child one day is that Scripture says that God knows us in our womb while we were being knit together in our mother's womb, and that He knows every hair on our heads, and that all things happen according to his good plans and his goodness. God breathes and we are given life. And so that's the way that I look at conception and life, is that it takes God's breath for us to be alive to begin with. I'm looking at Adam. And so I know that God breathed on us as we conceived the child, no matter how young that they were. And that this breath of life entered into my wife, and she had a child. Even if it didn't come into fruition through being birthed, you know, that is our child, and we hold firm to that, and we look forward to that glorious day when we get to be reunited. And what was really ironic in this whole process, and you know, we had this miscarriage in December of 2013. In January, the very next month, I was signed up for a class called Pastoral Crisis Intervention. And so as I'm walking through this grieving process, I go into this intensive class where we have a class, you know, 8 to 5 every day for a week, and I'm reading all of my material up front while I'm grieving, going through this grieving process of understanding the problem of evil and understanding how to intervene into as a pastoral hand into somebody's grieving process and being there in the midst of crisis in that vulnerable state and loving people through that, being a shoulder to lean on. So it was really, really quite divine right there that as I'm going through this grieving process, that I end up in a class that is all about grieving and all about dealing with these crisis issues. And so that really helped me process through my own grief while learning about how to do that pastorally. So I feel like that really prepared me a lot for ministry in that pastoral side. And at Asbury, there is a requirement for MDiv students, pastoral candidates, to take at least one. Usually it's encouraged to take two classes that are specifically dealing with pastoral care, pastoral crisis intervention type classes.
Wonderful. God's timing is so sweet, isn't it?
It is.
Particularly, in times of really deep stress like that, and with your exams and everything else that's going on. And I know, Nicole, your wife also has a business of her own. She's a photographer. I've seen her work online. It's just beautiful. And so,
Thank you.
I mean, there is life goes on in the midst of our sorrows. And so what I love is what happened next. Now, you mentioned, we're speaking with Kevin Cook, by the way. He's a seminary student at Asbury in Kentucky, and he and his wife, Nicole, went through the heartache of a miscarriage and then struggled with fertility, as he said, if you're just joining us, and then decided to become active. So what action did you take? How did you become an activist on this issue out of the grief that you were recovering from?
You know, really, God took all this. We never sought out being activists or sought out being a voice for those children who trying to save lives. We took up this mantle that we felt God calling us to go out and save one life. If we can save one life, attempt something big and save just one life, then that can make a difference. And, you know, maybe some people might be inspired by what we're doing and go out and do the same thing. So we went out to the abortion clinic with our signs, and we knew that there's some other people that stood out there with very different types of signs. So we wanted to kind of be a voice to them, say, hey, you know, this isn't about God's judgment or God's condemnation or trying to scare people away from their choices. It's about loving people. And if they can see God's love for them and then God's love for their child, then that would be much more compelling reason for them to turn away and choose life, not hatred and judgment. So we went out there to love on people, to tell them how much God loves them and how much hope there is for their life and for their child, and offer them the opportunity to choose life instead of death, and allow us to take care of their baby, take them through adoption, through a private adoption. We weren't able to connect with anybody out there the time we went out there, but we did take a picture. Decided to post it onto Facebook because of this campaign that's going on at Asbury. They say, take a picture when you see someone doing something, or if you're doing something for Jesus, and use this hashtag, attempt something big, and we'll record it. And basically, they'll give out free T-shirts to somebody each week for that. So part of it was that we wanted to just participate in what was going on at Asbury. So our social media director at Asbury saw our post, thought it was great and wanted to share it, so she asked us to make it a public picture, public post, so she could share it on the Asbury Seminary page. So she did that, and then from there it just started blowing up. And, you know, over the next couple of days we had a couple hundred shares and a couple thousand shares, and then by the end of the weekend, or by Monday maybe, it was at like 30,000, 25,000, 30,000 shares. And we had no idea what we had gotten ourselves into, or what God really was doing in our lives, better way to put it. And then one evening we looked and said, hey, maybe we should check our inbox on our Facebook, the other inbox that you don't get automatically. And we checked it, and we had hundreds and hundreds of messages that had come in. So we spent the entire day, basically, on Sunday going through those messages, and hundreds of messages of encouragement and support, you know, a handful of hate mail, people that thought we were doing something wrong or weren't acting the way Christians should, or some type of misunderstanding, or who knows what. A lot of people that were saying, well, why don't you go and adopt from foster care instead, not understanding that our hearts weren't necessarily just about adoption, but it was about ending abortion. And then we had, within the mix of messages, probably a couple dozen at the time, we've probably spoken with about 50 total women who were considering abortion, who saw our post, and something moved them from it, and they decided to message us. Several of them were like, I don't really know why I'm messaging you. I saw what you wrote, and I just felt compelled that I needed to message you and ask about what's going on. And so we spent the next several days, practically the entire week, reaching out to these women and talking to them. Some of them we tried to talk to personally and have phone conversations with. It was so overwhelming that sometimes it would just be a resource for these women and try to connect them with local adoption agencies and encourage them to go connect with them. All the people that, unfortunately, that we had talked to through that week personally, those connections had fallen through for different reasons. Some of them were very early on and ended up having miscarriages of their own, which is a whole mix of emotions there for those people. Some people flat out just stopped communicating with us. Not sure exactly what happened, if there's outside pressure to continue on their track towards abortion, or if for whatever reason, they chose to cut off communication with us. Some others, after talking to us, felt so compelled that they chose to keep the babies themselves, which is the best-case scenario. Amen to that. And God just started working through us in these conversations with women over that week. And we just continued looking for opportunities to be light and salt. So unfortunately, through all of that, we didn't end up with any opportunity to adopt ourselves. But this past week, things changed. I don't know if you wanted to talk about that now.
Absolutely. First, it sounds like there's an announcement coming up, but before we do that, tell me what the sign said for those who haven't seen the post. Of course, we've got it linked at cradlemyheart.org, but we have some listeners, I suppose, who aren't online. Tell me what the signs actually said, Kevin. And you said, you know, nothing really happened that day that you stood there on the sidewalk with these signs, but what did your signs say?
I try to picture them off the top of my head. I don't have the picture in front of me, but I believe one of them said along the lines of, God loves you and your baby. And the other one said, please mm-hmm. don't abort. Let us adopt your child. Come talk to us.
Yeah. And you know what I think is so dear about this is that oftentimes when we step out in faith, we don't see a response. I don't know if you were disappointed when you went home. You know, you took the picture and you said, well, you know, okay, we're attempting something big. I mean, how was that in the short term? Did you feel like, you know, this is going somewhere and it doesn't matter how it looks in the short term? There's a chance for you to encourage some of us here who are attempting big things too.
Absolutely. Yeah, when we left there, we were a little bit discouraged, one, because we weren't able to reach out to anybody, but also, two, because our hearts not only broke for these women that we saw coming in. I mean, one of the women we saw coming in, she was a teenage girl, and her mother and her mom and dad came and dropped her off, and it was just heartbreaking. Like, come and talk to us, please. We have a better option for you. But our heart also broke because of these other Christians that were out there with a completely different message. And part of us were like, I'm not sure if I want to come back because I don't want to be associated with these people, being lumped in with them. We have a completely different message, and we were brainstorming if there's a different way that we could go about ministering to these women, maybe even going and talking to the clinic. And hey, we're people who want to come out here and just love on these people. We don't want to, you know, hate on them. We don't want to be on a big bullhorn and yelling at them to do things. We just want to be a light to them and tell them that God loves them. Could we come and do something with you? We had talked about that. But then all of this blew up on Facebook.
Well, if you decide to take that step, I would really love to hear how that works out, because not to be negative, but my guess is that they won't be interested in having you give spiritual counsel and love to women considering abortion. God can do anything, of course. And so please, if you do that, please follow up with us, Kevin. We'd like to hear that chapter of the story. So now you're telling me that maybe there is the prospect of an adoption on the horizon.
That's right. A good friend of mine who's also a seminary student, and a member of my church, that I lead worship at, he works part-time at a local restaurant, and told me that on last Sunday, he sent me a Facebook message or a text message saying, hey, I've got a friend here that I work with who just opened up to me about how she's planning to get an abortion this week. I told her about your story. Are you guys really interested in still pursuing this? I'm like, absolutely. We want to save a life. We're still looking for that opportunity. And he's like, okay, great. I talked to her, and I gave her your story. I told her all about what you guys were doing, and I convinced her to, instead of going to get an abortion this week, to at least first meet with you guys and talk to you guys and see if there's a different option. And so we did. So we met on Thursday, this past Thursday. We got lunch and we talked for about an hour and a half. We really hit it off. And she told us that the entire week, that after speaking with my friend, you know, there's just something going on in her, and she just realized that there's no way she could go through with this abortion after hearing about there being another option. And so she took us up on our offer. And so we're hopefully, we've had these kind of conversations before, and we've had things cut off afterward. And so we're still holding our breath a little bit, but we're hoping that this turns into a true adoption. We left that conversation, and she was completely on board, and she was excited, and she was wanting us to be at all of her doctor's appointments with her. Fortunately, she's local in Lexington, and she wanted us to walk through the whole process with her. So we contacted our adoption attorney, and we're getting the ball rolling on that, and we're just waiting for that follow-up communication to come, and hopefully that'll seal the deal, and we'll move forward with the process.
Wow. You know, Kevin, this is the hair kind of is standing on the back of my neck, because that's exciting. It's wonderful to ponder, you know, that this could come to pass. And I know that, you know, one of the things that I read in one of the articles about you and Nicole is that you've said, okay, we're open to two, and that's all we can handle if we also got pregnant, you know. So,
so that's basically what happened when we got overwhelmed with all these messages from dozens and dozens of women who were inquiring about, hey, we are interested in not aborting after seeing your post. And so we were like talking with these women, like, we can't adopt all of these babies. We can't start an orphanage in our house, you know? And so we decided, how many can we take? Somebody called us out saying, well, in your original post, I know it might have been a dramatic emotional statement that we'll take all of your babies, but you said that. And, you know, God kind of convicted me on that and said, okay, well, we can logistically, you know, I'm a student full time, so we don't have much income, and working part-time, but I'm going to be graduating soon. We can take two. We can take two, and we're going to still try to get pregnant ourselves. There's nothing going to stop that. It's not a replacement issue here. So we can take two and see what God can do with that. But then all of this kind of fell apart, and we haven't had one yet.
Well, what I love about that is your willingness and your openness to see what God has for you, Kevin. And mm-hmm. I also have been so inspired by your story that I went to your GoFundMe page and dropped a little something in the hat. And I hope everybody listening will. You know, the cooks are, for those listening, the cooks need $30,000 to accomplish an adoption. And as Kevin just said, that's on a student's salary. And so you go to cradlemyheart.org if you're inspired, if you're moved, if you want to do something big and be part of something big, join them and support them. And I'm just really excited to see how that part of it's going to work out too. Kevin, we're out of time. I hope we'll get a chance to follow up. Thank you so much for sharing this story with us today.
Thank you for allowing me to share the story with you and your listeners.
All right. Kevin Cook is a theology student at Asbury Seminary, and his viral post may lead to an adoption. We'll continue to pray and continue to have faith that he and Nicole will welcome a child into their family and soon. Thank you for listening to Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm Kim Cotola, your host. Now, stay with us here on our Faith Radio stations. We are going to be opening the phones for your calls. Our number is 1-800-811-3003. We'll be live here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart. With Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
We're here for you and we are live, so please do pick up the phone and give us a call and let us know your thoughts. If you had already seen the Cook's story, and perhaps you've been following it in social media, wasn't it a joy to listen to Kevin Cook share personally what this journey of hoping to do something about abortion is leading to. I hope that we're going to be able to follow up with Kevin and Nicole again in the near future. And I love God's providential timing that this story aired this Sunday night at the end of a long and difficult weekend for the residents of Colorado Springs, Colorado, where abortion at a Planned Parenthood facility took the lives of three innocent people in a shootout that occurred there. I am, in case you're wondering about my position, I'm a very small fish in the pro-life world, but since I represent a pro-life viewpoint on this program, I will tell you that everyone I know within the pro-life movement has always denounced and decried every act of violence against abortion providers. Without exception, unequivocally, categorically, it is not anything anyone in the pro-life movement endorses. When clinic violence was happening back in the 90s, there was a religious cult involved that considered themselves Christian. Again, everyone I know in the pro-life community has distanced themselves from those who take matters into their own hands as vigilantes. Are we upset over the loss of life that happens in each and every abortion? Yes, we are. Is the answer violence on our part? Never. And so I need to say that, and I need to say that most in the pro-life community that have been weighing in on it over the weekend, this shooting that occurred, I'm assuming that you've seen the news. We've got some stories that we'll be linking after the broadcast if you haven't, trying to get you up to speed on it. But the pro-life leaders that I've seen over the weekend weighing in have said it's unacceptable, it's tragic, it is not anything that anyone who is pro-life would do. This is not what the pro-life movement is about. And I guess what I would have you consider as you're thinking about this too, is the fact that, the local authorities have said they're not going to release anything about their investigation as to the possible motives of the shooter until Monday afternoon at 1:30 Colorado time. And yet, very early on, lots and lots and lots of mainstream media outlets and all the big ones, including the New York Times and Washington Post, were, posting stories about abortion clinic violence in terms of, acts of domestic terrorism. In some cases, the Army of God, which is the cult that I referenced before, was acting in the 1990s in an organized fashion. But since then, you cannot say that about any acts of violence against abortion clinics. There has not been any link found that shows any sort of organized group that I think would elevate what individuals are doing to the level to call it domestic terrorism. And even presidential candidate Mike Huckabee said that it characterized it as domestic terrorism. I don't think that fits. And I don't think that helps the pro-life cause. Is it absolutely wrong? Yes. Is it a tragedy for everybody involved? Yes. But is it domestic terrorism? I don't think it is. We have the characteristics of the shooter from the people that knew him, his former neighbors, saying that he was an off-the-grid mountain man. And we also had reports that he was just shooting at people at random before he took cover inside Planned Parenthood. I don't think that qualifies as domestic terrorism. What do you think? I in no way mean to diminish what occurred, and I certainly don't mean to add to the grief of the families. And Planned Parenthood did release their names, and I think, we need to absolutely give honor and dignity to them. Because, they're innocent people. And in the case of the law enforcement officer who lost his life defending Planned Parenthood, though he was staunchly pro-life, we need to celebrate his life. The other victims, the two civilians who've been named by Colorado Planned Parenthood, named by family members, the media, again, won't be formally identifying them until tomorrow afternoon when they'll have a press conference about this. But one woman said her family has said that she was there accompanying a friend. Her name is Jennifer Markowski, a Hawaiian-born resident of Colorado Springs. And the man who was killed, named Kayari Stewart. Third person killed, University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, police officer Garrett Swazi, and he was a 44-year-old father of two who responded to the scene after the shooting started on Friday morning. Nine were wounded in the attack. All of those are expected to recover. The suspect is in police custody. His name is Robert Lewis Deer. And again, there are leaked reports from law enforcement saying that he said no more baby parts, a presumed reference to the Center for Medical Progress videos exposing what was going on behind closed doors at Planned Parenthood locations. But no motive, again, has been officially confirmed. Despite that, earlier today, Planned Parenthood used Twitter to say, "We now know the man responsible for the tragic shooting at PP's Health Center in Colorado was motivated by opposition to safe and legal abortion." Well, do we? And if that was leaked by law enforcement, I would like to have everybody have the facts before we start debating that and talking about that. Tell me your thoughts as this news has unfolded. 1-800-811-3003. If this was somebody who was acting on his own, as a person who had an unknown motive, is that terrorism? 1-800-811-3003 is our phone number. 1-800-811-3003. in 2014, the level of violence against abortion facilities was exactly zero. There were some reports of vandalism, and there were some reports of harassment, but there were no, and in fact, there has not been a shooting at an abortion facility in, I think, over 10 years. Now, Dr. George Tiller was shot, tragically, again, at his church in the mid-2000s, so almost 10 years ago. But the way that the story is being reported, I think, is as inflammatory as those in the media who are saying that the Center for Medical Progress videos incited violence against that clinic in Colorado Springs. Do you have thought about that? 1-800-811-3003. Given that we don't know yet what the shooter's motives were. Early reports said they thought that it was a robbery gone wrong because there were eyewitnesses who said that he had first taken aim and was shooting at the Chase Bank located near Planned Parenthood. Then there were reports not emanating from law enforcement, but some reporting law enforcement corrected that. Again, we haven't had that press conference until tomorrow afternoon, but I mean, I think there is enough conflicting evidence that we can't say anything for certain as yet. 1-800-811-3003. So maybe you'd just like to share what your thought was when you heard this news. I was celebrating the Thanksgiving holiday with family, and someone let me know that this had happened, and this particular family member and I have had many long conversations where there hasn't been very much agreement on the issue of the pro-life and pro-choice debate. And, you know, I simply said to him the same thing that I said to open the program. It's tragic. It's horrible. I denounce it. It has nothing to do with what the pro-life movement is about. And So I don't think he was surprised to hear me say that. No one should be surprised to hear that anybody in pro-life leadership or anyone who counts themselves as pro-life would feel the same way. I saw one news report that said there are groups that go and stand and protest on the sidewalk outside of that abortion provider. And all of the people who were asked about who this shooter is said they had no idea. They'd never seen him before. He wasn't any part of, any organized protest. So again, is it fair for the media or politicians to characterize that as domestic terrorism? And as I say, it wasn't only, liberal or pro-choice or abortion advocating politicians. Mike Huckabee, who's extremely pro-life, also has said it's domestic terrorism. I just feel like that's premature. There's a story in The Guardian which is notoriously, I'm trying to be unbiased here, but let's say I will think better of that term. The Guardian UK is historically a news outlet that advocates for abortion rights. And they have a story that says Republicans reject a link between anti-abortion rhetoric and a Colorado shooting. But now this report written by Sabrina Siddiqui in Washington, subheadline says Mike Huckabee says blaming campaign trail comments is disingenuous. As Ben Carson notes, there's no saint in this equation. So we'll go on to let you know what the reporting is here in The Guardian. Sabrina Siddiqui writes, Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee on Sunday condemned the fatal shooting at a Planned Parenthood facility in Colorado as an absolutely abominable act of domestic terrorism. However, he said it was disingenuous to cast the attack as the result of anti-abortion rhetoric on the presidential campaign trail. Huckabee's response was representative of the Republican field. Frontrunner Donald Trump said the shooting was terrible, but focused on the mental state of the alleged gunman. I tend to agree with Donald Trump in this case. I'm not sure that I've said that on many other issues that he's been very outspoken about, but in this case, I tend to agree with him. Ben Carson deplored the killings, but said when asked if the attack was a form of domestic terrorism, as a Planned Parenthood official had claimed, he said there's no saint in this equation. Three people were killed, as we mentioned, nine injured in the shooting, and all of those have been reported in good condition late this evening, this Sunday, while we're airing here live on our Faith Radio affiliates. And the shootings happened on Friday. The police officer, again, Garrett Swazi, two civilians, have been named by Planned Parenthood, and the suspect is in custody. And now reports Saturday night said he had used the phrase, "no more baby parts," in interviews with officials. That was seemingly a reference to the scandal over the videos released by an anti-abortion group, which report to show Planned Parenthood officials discussing the sale of fetal tissue. Again, I'm reading from The Guardian's reporting on this. And The Guardian then goes on to say, and I think they make a leap here that they don't really support, but they say the videos have fueled invective on the campaign trail from Republican presidential candidates and attempts in Congress to defund the organization. Well, that is correct. Planned Parenthood has denied wrongdoing by its staff. So Huckabee said, "We don't fully know what the facts are," in an appearance on CNN. But then he went on to say, regardless of why the gunman did it, what he did is domestic terrorism, and what he did is absolutely abominable, especially to those of us in the pro-life movement, because there's nothing about any of us that would condone or in any way look the other way at something like this. He added, "There's no legitimizing, there's no rationalizing, it was mass murder. It was absolutely unfathomable, and there's no excuse for killing other people. Whether it's happening inside the Planned Parenthood headquarters, inside their clinics where many millions of babies die, or whether it's people attacking Planned Parenthood. We ought to value life," Huckabee said. "Everyone truly does have worth and value." In a statement released soon after the shooting, the CEO of Planned Parenthood in the Rocky Mountains said the organization was concerned that extremists are creating a poisonous environment that feeds domestic terrorism in this country. Huckabee sharply disagreed with that assessment, saying, "I don't know any pro-life leader who has suggested violence toward Planned Parenthood personnel or some act of violence toward their clinics." He said, "I have heard universal condemnation in the wake of this." And he said, "I think it's disingenuous on the part," he said, actually, let me quote him exactly in The Guardian. They report that Mike Huckabee said, "I think that's a little bit disingenuous on the part of Planned Parenthood to blame people who have a strong philosophical disagreement with the dismembering of human babies and with the selling of body parts to say that we would like to retaliate by sending some madman into a clinic to kill people. God knows that's not what anybody would want." 1-800-811-3003 is our number. Call us and let me know your thoughts about this here at Cradle My Heart Radio. The tragedy in Colorado, does it say more than simply the fact that it is a tragic occurrence that's going to take much time to heal? And maybe, you know, if we guard our words a bit more, we can not add to the need for healing. Call us. Let us know what you think here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others. Find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for listening tonight. We're going to talk a little bit more about the shootings in Colorado, because I think that while it's a tragedy, and while we grieve for the loss of life, and we also grieve for the loss of peace, that people ought to be able to go and obtain a legal medical procedure without fear of death. I need to say that. And I need to say it unequivocally. I am opposed to abortion, but I do understand that it is a right, and that I have no right to impede somebody's ability to exercise that right. But having said that, the way that this shooting is being reported is definitely, I think, in many cases, aimed at shaping public opinion about it, not just reporting the facts. More in The Guardian's reporting, we see them quoting the governor of Colorado, saying that the U.S. ought to look into ways to tone down some of the inflammatory rhetoric that was potentially pushing mentally ill people over the edge. Certainly it's a form of terrorism, he said, of the shooting on CNN when he was being interviewed. And he said, maybe in some ways it's a function of the inflammatory rhetoric we see on so many issues. Do you think that that is true? Do you think that exposing the truth about abortion could be blamed for a person who is mentally unstable going and doing a shooting? Or does that narrative serve to shield and protect Planned Parenthood from having their activities exposed? 1-800-811-3003. He's clearly taking a position. He's ascribing motive, and he's clearly taking a position that Planned Parenthood has been victimized by those who would expose in the media what it is that they are doing as a legal business. And if they're a legal business, why would they be so concerned about their practices being exposed? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. Governor Hickenlooper of Colorado went on to say on CNN, now there are bloggers and talk shows where they really focus on trying to get people to that point of boiling over and just intense anger. Maybe it's time to also look at how do we tone down some of that rhetoric. Governor said he was not suggesting the country reduce its commitment to free speech. Instead, he seemed to focus on the idea of being more cautious with respect to overheated political rhetoric. The exact motive, the Guardian then reports, behind the Planned Parenthood shooting had not been officially confirmed, but Deere's mention of baby parts, which again is alleged at this point, we don't have anybody on the record saying that he said that. But the Guardian UK says, but Deere's mention of baby parts triggered reminders of other attacks on the women's health care group that have included shootings and arson. Well, that's not exactly good reporting either, because those videos came out in July of this year, and there has not been a shooting in the wake of the videos being released until this shooting. In the 24 hours after the shooting, most Republican presidential candidates remained silent. Ted Cruz commented on Saturday. I don't know why people are taking heat for that, for taking a day to consider a statement. He said on Saturday the incident was unacceptable, horrific, and wrong. The Democratic presidential candidates reacted to the attack with statements of support for Planned Parenthood. President Obama actually pushed for stricter gun laws while declaring enough is enough. And he said, we don't yet know what this particular gunman's so-called motive was for shooting 12 people or for terrorizing an entire community when he opened fire with an assault weapon and took hostages at a Planned Parenthood center in Colorado, the president said in a statement released Saturday morning. But what we do know is that he killed a cop in the line of duty along with two of the citizens that police officer was trying to protect. And he said, this is not normal. We can't let it become normal. Well, amen to that. Amen to that. But I don't think that we get there by stereotyping the pro-life movement as either steeped in violence, fulminating and inciting violence, somehow condoning and cooperating with violence. And all of these reports add to that stereotype of the pro-life movement. I don't know if you agree. Let me know what you think. Our phones are open right now at 800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio, 1-800-811-3003. You know, this news is dominating the pro-life and anti-abortion news feeds, but there are some other stories in the news, and if you want to know what is happening week by week, I sure hope that you'll go to our Facebook page and like the page simply so that you can see where our reporting will take you in your news feed. There were a lot of pro-life stories in the news this week, and not least of which is abortion having its moment in primetime television. There were three or four abortion storylines on some very popular programs this past week, scandal being one of the ones that most scandalously portrayed it in the minds of many, as the lead character Olivia Pope aborted with Silent Night playing in the background. It was a poignant scene of her ability to access an abortion provider who shut down the clinic for everybody but her during the Christmas season. And if you want to read my thoughts about it, you can go to cradlemyheart.org, because that moment in primetime television, I think, raised a really important question. It was extremely offensive to many Christians who felt that it mocked the birth of Jesus Christ, depicting her having an abortion with that playing in the soundtrack and later the Ave Maria. But it raised the question of, is God present during an abortion? How grieved is he as these events are unfolding? What does he have to say to us about it as individuals, as communities, as our nation? I hope you'll take the time to read that. And you can send us a comment, leave us a comment there, right there on the website at cradlemyheart.org. But you'll also find a link to our Facebook page where we're covering many, many pro-life stories that are in the news every week. Thank you so much for making us a part of your Thanksgiving weekend. We do give thanks for the ability to speak freely, to love, and to uphold the dignity of all human life. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on myfaithradio.com.